Welcome to El Paso Food Voices. I'm your host, Meredith Iabarca. Today's episode is going to be a conversation with my ex-student and collaborator now, Josh Lopez, and we'll be discussing two ideas about food, and that's culinary heritage and culinary kinship. We'll be discussing these ideas in relationship to the work that we've done for many years now in gathering food stories from residents of El Paso, Texas. So let me first introduce you. I'll ask Josh to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about his work, and then I'll talk a little bit more about the work that we've been doing with El Paso Food Voices. Welcome, Josh.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me back to the podcast. You introduced me. My name's Joshua Lopez, and we began working together on food since I did my master's. And since then, I've decided to go on and get a PhD in history, where I study food at the University of North Texas. And for my dissertation, because of our work together on food and El Paso Food Voices, I decided to also do an oral history project with the LGBTQ plus community in El Paso, recording their food stories and trying to learn about the relationships that we have with food as members of the LGBTQ plus community. And I actually contributed some of those interviews to El Paso Food Voices. And I think now we have up to 22 recipes and videos on the archive.
Yes. Let me take this a few moments just to tell our audience what El Paso Food Voices is, because it's actually two projects in one. Right now we are in the podcast. So, and since you were talking about, you know, being my student here at the University of Texas at El Paso, when you started talking about food, I would like to remind or share with our audience that the very creation of El Paso Food Voices podcast was a result of a class-based project that I did in a graduate seminar. I think it was fall 2019. So the first four episodes of El Paso Food Voices are actually recorded by students, but they came up with the entire idea of doing a podcast. Students had also collaborated significantly in the other aspect of El Paso Food Voices, which is an open source digital archive. It's a website. And that's what Josh was talking about, that in this website, we've been gathering, he and I, we've been gathering food stories from our community. We do videos. That website has recipes. It has a link to the podcast and a few other resources for people who are interested on food stories. Our passion, and I think Josh can collaborate in this one, our passion has always been to learn what food means to people, how they make sense of their lives, how they communicate who they are or who they want to be through their stories. So that has been our central motivation. And today, as we're thinking about culinary heritage and culinary kinship, what has brought us to those ideas is wondering if those ideas can help us really understand what one of the contributors to El Paso Food Voices website in her story has said. This is a public historian. Her name is Yolanda Chavez Leyva. And she speaks about how food says something about what she calls an intimate history. So why don't we begin by hearing what Yolanda Leyva in her story, how she defines intimate history.
What is important to me is really to help people remember their history, to help them remember what means something to them. So when I see someone crying at the sight of a kitchen setting, or see someone being very emotional watching an elder use a molcajete, I know that they are remembering their history. And this is a very broad definition of history, right? But we all have a history. And to carry on those memories, and maybe they'll go tell their children or their grandchildren, oh, today I saw this woman with a molcajete, and then they tell the story of their mother, their abuelita. Like, that's passing on a very intimate kind of history that I think is important for us, for our spiritual health, for our emotional health, and I think it affects our physical health.
So listening to Yolanda, every time I listen to the story and I think about how she frames this idea of intimate history that we carry. It kind of leads me to three questions. And these are questions that Josh and I have been working a lot or thinking deeply about. And one of them is, first of all, to ask, how does this intimate history get passed from one generation to the next? So that's one question. Another question is, how does the skills of cooking, of preparing, the processes, what ideas about roots and where we come from are communicated in such history? And the other question that is really, really important to us as we been gathering stories from elders, people I should not talk about people's ages, but El Paso Food Voices actually has a collection of stories that range from abuelitas, grandmothers, to grandchildren, I guess. So we have, right, Josh, a really broad range. So the third question that is really important to us is, how does these intimate histories from previous generations continue to be relevant to younger generations? So those are the three questions that have been motivating our work, that led us to think about culinary heritage.
And I think in our discussions together, when we're thinking about culinary heritage and culinary kinship, is that somehow with kinship, there is something that's very emotional and spiritual that food brings out, or our experiences of food bring out. And I think your questions really point us to those connections between culinary heritage and culinary kinship.
Yeah, and we, in our conversations, actually, our conversations about this topic did not begin with kinship. That's something that we sort of stumbled into, because we actually began with culinary heritage, just because that seems like the most appropriate thing, right? We inherit, therefore it's heritage. But that led us to start exploring, we began exploring more about how culinary heritage is framed within what is known as the culinary heritage industry, I'm sorry. And by heritage industry, what we discover, and here we're talking about organizations like UNESCO, that has a category on intangible cultural heritage, culinary tourism. So we started reading, or at least, and Josh and I talking about these issues. And what led us to wonder maybe kinship would be a better concept, thinking about Yolanda, what she says, heals us emotionally and spiritually. Because what I learned with heritage, with the way UNESCO, the way these official definitions are framed, it tends to focus on divisions, on separations, and I would even go as far as to talk about the commodification of tradition. For instance, UNESCO wants to preserve this intangible cultural heritage for the benefit of humanity, but in the very act of preserving, they delineate, like, this is one thing and this is another thing. So to me, there's a sense of culture. And then, like I said, it feels like they really are commodifying. The other thing that intrigued me is that, for instance, with UNESCO, once again, people, countries, regions have to apply. There's a process of applying so that your food traditions, food heritage gets under this, be put in this list, right? And I find it fascinating, the idea that an institution and an organization can decide what is worthy to preserve for the benefit of humanity and what is not. And when I think about the three foods that they have classified as worthy to preserve and the way they describe them, I think is interesting. And these are French cuisine, the Mediterranean diet, and Mexican, particularly Michoacan, traditional food. And I find that interesting in the choices of words. Josh, you want to tell something about the difference between cuisine and tradition and in terms of how we understand that in the food world?
Yeah, that in our conversations really struck me too, how naming is really powerful. And in this case, we see kind of a relationship that, cuisine sounds much more, for lack of a better way of phrasing this, like a aesthetic and culture, that is what cuisine reminds me of, that somehow it's valued on the level of aesthetics versus tradition.
And aesthetics, let me just add one more thing. Aesthetics in the sense that it suggests cuisine has always, especially with French cuisine, like innovation and moving forward and you know, this is how you're creating the art of cooking, right? That's in terms of cuisine. And when we think about French, we're also talking, let's not forget that here we're talking about the global north. So there's also an issue about global north versus global the global south. Because in traditions, you know, like you said, when we think about traditions, what is it that we normally think about? Or at least with UNESCO, what they're thinking about is something that is steeped in a practice that does not change over time, right? This reminds me of an article that I read by a food scholar. His name is Raúl Mata, and he did a studies about cocineras tradicionales from Michoacán, and talking about how UNESCO frames this. And the gist of his argument is really fascinating to me, because what he was really saying is, okay, so now that Mexican food, or particularly from Michoacán, has been classified as a Mexican traditional heritage of, you know, preserving what Mexico means, Mexican food means, that they actually have organizations now in Mexico, quote unquote, teaching indigenous looking women how to be traditional in their cooking. And if that does not sound like a commodification, I don't know what it is. So thinking about these ideas, what the concern that this raised for Josh and I in thinking about our work is that this official classification of culinary heritage has the danger of actually erasure, specifically, particularly those kinds of intimate histories that we heard Yolanda Leyva talk about, those intimate histories that we've been hearing in so many of the stories that we've been gathering and sharing in El Paso Food Voices projects. So I would like to ask Josh to walk us a little bit more about how our thinking about culinary kinship is being developing.
Yeah, and I think it starts with that notion of intimate history, that if we think about kinship, we usually think about that in terms of family. But here we're thinking about kinship as something that goes beyond blood-based relationships, because sharing food with someone, cooking for someone else, and eating together, those are acts that are very vulnerable, and also that connect people. To bring it back to Yolanda's story, we didn't get to hear this in her clip, but she kind of sets up that moment. I remember because I love her story so much. Before that, she says that she realizes food grounds people in public. I remember that because I love her story.
Yes.
And she says that. And for me, when I think about those words, I think about the way that as people are remembering their abuelitas together, they're sharing in that intimate moment, right? They're, as they cry together or share stories with one another, they're sharing very intimate parts of themselves with one another. And so I think that intimacy and vulnerability has led us to think about kinship in this way. So it's going beyond blood-based family relationships and more of these shared connections through food.
Yeah, and you brought to my attention when you were thinking about your own development of your dissertation that you've come across a particular anthropologist, Christopher, forgive me, I don't remember his last name, the anthropologist
right.
that talks about kinship. Can you tell us a little more what he talks about? Because he mentions certain aspects of these kinds of kinships that I think are important to the food stories that we've been hearing.
Yeah, so in my research, I've read a little bit about queer kinship in the ways that LGBTQ plus folks create communities or these notions of family that go beyond blood. And Christopher Roebuck, an anthropologist, he described kinship in his work as a way that people form relationships that's built on practices of obligation, care, and support. So in a sense, there's a created sense of responsibility for one another, of taking care of one another. And that's kind of how he frames and sees kinship in his work and in his research of communities that form these kinds of bonds.
And to me, that was really fascinating to hear that, because here you're telling us, okay, this is a scholar that in his research and his going out to the field, he's understanding kinship this way. And it reminded me of another story in El Paso Food Voices, in which Lucy Fisher was, when she is answering the one question, when we record all of these stories, there's one question that we ask everybody at the end, and that is, what does food mean to you? So when Lucy Fisher was answers that question, the way that she answers by quoting a Catholic priest from the Netherlands, I think that it captures this idea of obligation, responsibility, and care in a way that is not, an anthropologist doing his field research or her field research, but it's just a way in which, in her daily life, what food, how she enacts those responsibilities and obligations and care in the dailiness of cooking and sharing food. So let's hear, because I think she says it so beautifully by quoting this Catholic priest. Let's hear how Lucy Fisher Ways speaks about this idea of caring through food.
I don't know that I have something profound to say about food, but I needed help in finding the essence of what I wanted to say. And here it goes. This is from Henri Nguyen, a Catholic priest from the Netherlands. He says, when we invite friends for a meal, we do much more than offer them food for their bodies. We offer friendship, fellowship, good conversation, intimacy, and closeness. When we say, help yourself, take some more, don't be shy, have another glass, we offer our guests not only our food and drink, but also ourselves. A spiritual bond grows, and we become food and drink for one another.
That phrase, that we become food and drink from one another, that we nurture each other, not just by the fact that we are actually literally eating food, but that we are making time for one another, that we are sitting together, that we are asking, tell me about your day, talk to me, right? That is that. I think that's, to me, that's how I frame and understand what Yolanda says, that is good for us spiritually and emotionally. So the power that that Josh and I are beginning to understand about kinship, culinary kinship, is that it's grounded in relationships. It's grounded in emotions. It's grounded in care, on taking care of one another. And this helps us understand that cooking is, it's not just the labor of actually making a meal or gathering food or going to the grocery store or all those things about the production of a meal, but it's really more about, or in addition to, as you say, this idea of emotional and spiritual and acts, and biological acts that create emotional bonds. And this brings me to another soundbite that I want to talk about and have Josh reflect on it. Because this is a soundbite from Hugo Lorea, and I'm going to just say something here that Josh and I have not spoken about, but I'm going to say it in public, so I hope he forgives me. This is a soundbite from his partner, Hugo. And this is how Hugo talks about what food means to him. And I think it captures everything that we've just been saying about kinship. So let's listen to how Hugo says this.
To me, food means keeping my mom alive, having a connection to the past and to my family. My family is kind of quiet. Sometimes we don't talk a lot or have like closeness in terms of like sharing a lot of like our personal stuff with each other. But I do feel like that's my way of sharing with them, cooking a meal for them, making them feel like I care, and I can do that through food.
Yeah, so that was Hugo Loeda, my partner, who I had the privilege to interview for El Paso Food Voices. And I learned so much about him interviewing him about his food stories. And just to give that moment some context, his mom passed away in 2010. And in his story, a lot of his cooking is drawn from her inspiration, her knowledge. He's kept two handwritten cookbooks that she made when she was alive, and he cooks from them, and he cooks from memory. And one of the things he loves is when he makes a dish from his mom, and people in his family say, "It's like your mom never left. This tastes just like hers." And he takes such great satisfaction in that. And so for me, when I hear him say that this is how he shows how he cares about his sisters and his dad, that he happily takes on this obligation to keep their mother's memory alive through food while physically nourishing his family. And I think that's such a powerful thing to think about in relationship to culinary kinship. The idea of keeping history or the past alive in the present, and that is motivated by a sense of obligation that shouldn't feel like a burden, right? That it should. I think obligation tends to be framed as something that can be burdensome, but in this case, it's something he happily takes on.
I think. Thank you for saying that, because I think it gives us a different relationship to this notion that. That yes, we do have obligations and responsibilities for others. We have obligations and responsibilities for ourselves, for others. And I think that is coming a lot in a lot of the stories. So I think when Hugo says, you know, this is how I show it, and like you frame it, that he happily takes this obligation. But the other thing that I notice, especially, and I invite our audience to think how Hugo's talking about in terms of making these dishes, right? And the fact that he does have a handbook written from cookbooks written from his recipes, I should say, in a notebook from that his mother wrote. And earlier in that episode, he also says that he's always been interested in food and he always used to watch his mom do this and that. That, plus the relationships that we're talking about, the food forms, sort of kind of shifted my thinking a little bit, because first I started thinking about, oh, we can frame all of these stories to culinary heritage. And then, like I said earlier, we started thinking, well, heritage is kind of a complicated term because of the way of sense of divisiveness or freezing in time certain traditions. So we went to kinship. But the more I think about it, the more I realize that it's not an either or, that it's actually both. But the way that I see heritage is that it's more about the skills, the how to prepare a meal. And those skills are not necessarily because you read a recipe and you follow it, but in terms of the case of Hugo, he remembers, right? Because he even said when he tried to make chiles rellenos, which is the dish that he has to make to remember his mom, he's like, well, I never really did this because I didn't like eggs, but then I started to remember, and I just keep tapping at your memory, right? Your sensory memory. So I was beginning to feel that in our stories, in our collection of stories in the website of El Paso Food Voices, as well as stories that we have heard air in the podcast in the last year or so, there is a combination of both. It's heritage of skills and kinship or relationships. And there's one last piece of a story that I would like to share with the audience from another story that we have in El Paso Food Voices. This is Chef Roman Wilcox. And I think in the way that he starts answering the idea of what food means to him, and he frames this by speaking first about all his journey in terms of being wanting to be a chef from a very early age, going to culinary school, working in one of the most famous restaurants, well-known restaurants in El Paso, Café Central, cooking with meat and so on and so forth, I mean, and eating hamburgers and all that, to his journey where he has become a vegan chef, and the fact that his restaurant, One Grub Community, was the first 100% plant-based restaurant in town and in El Paso, Texas. But this is how he frames what food means to him, where I feel that it really interconnects heritage, and I should say culinary heritage and culinary kinship. Let's take a listen to how he frames this.
Food has given me a burden of responsibility that I happily take on. And so because of that, I want to grow it. I want to teach people how to grow it. I want to cook with it. I want to teach people how to cook with it. I want to bring people together around it so that we can learn about other important things from it. You know, it's responsibility.
as it is. And it should mean the same thing to all of us, because collectively, if we all took on that responsibility, there would be drastic change.
And by that drastic change, I just want to point out, you know, what he's referring to the food industry, but the food industry impacts just about every aspect of our lives. So that responsibility is not just to each other as people, but it's also a responsibility of human to non-human. It's a responsibility to our environment. And that's the drastic change that he's talking about.
The sense of responsibility and what you're bringing up, it's causing me to reflect, and I hope that our audience will also reflect on this, is how culinary kinship, again, thinking about kinship as going beyond blood-based relationships, how do we form, or how does food inform our relationships to the earth, to animals, to even water? Those are all living relationships that we experience through our food. And what is responsibility, obligation, and care look like in that relationship? And how does this shift our perception of sharing food with one another as well? So it just brings up a lot of questions for me about, again, the role of responsibility and kinship. And as you said, heritage and kinship are not necessarily opposed to each other, but they're also in relationship with one another. And so how do we think about these big ideas about food?
Yeah, and I would like to answer, I know we're asking this to our guests, to our audience, to think about that in their own foods, but let me share really, really quickly a personal story that has changed my perspective about something that is a dish that is very, very important to me, which is chilaquiles. And when I think about now, putting it in terms of the context of what aspect of the chilaquiles are heritage and what are kinships. And for me, when I cook chilaquiles, I'm not cooking a Mexican breakfast dish. So it's not that traditional national dish, right? For me, it's something that my mother made for me when I was a little girl. And what I see the idea of heritage is that the way I make my chilaquiles now, I'm using the techniques that she taught me. I know which kinds of tortillas to buy, what kind of thickness of tortillas to buy. I know that the oil has to be really, really hot so that they fry evenly. So that's, to me, that's part of a heritage, a technique. But that heritage has extended, actually, because I also learned from other people who gave me recipes about how to make salsas. I do my chilaquiles with a tomatillo sauce. But I learned from another lady that in order to get a smoky flavor out of the sauce, what you do is you get a garlic and you burn it, like literally burn it in an open flame. And then you add that to your salsa and gets that smokiness flavor. So that now has become the signature of my technique of making. So that, to me, I see it as heritage. However, when I share chilaquiles, when I invite people to my house, and I often do this, I always tell them, if I'm cooking chilaquiles for you, you and I have a very... I think of you very, very, very as a very special person in my life, because I'm actually sharing. The bond that I'm sharing is that same bond that I have, that spiritual, social bond that I have with my mother. I'm now extending it to those sitting at my table eating chilaquiles. So that's a personal story that, or a perspective that has changed a little bit for me in how I think about this dish that is so important to my sense of identity.
Yeah, I have a similar story, and I shared it on an earlier podcast episode. It's in relationship to my coming out story, but here I think it's relevant. Chocolate Abuelita, talk about culinary heritage, right? This the label of, you know, because you can buy Chocolate Abuelita, and the label suggests a Mexican heritage, and it's Mexican spiced. So it's trying to communicate that. But in my family, my mom has told me that her mom, my grandma, never expressed the words "I loved you" to her siblings, but she would make chocolate abuelita for them. And my mom told me, she was like, I knew that she was telling me she loved me when she shared that drink. And so my mom has done that for us. My brother, my sister, and I, we have memories of having chocolate abuelita, of coming home on a cold autumn day or winter day after school, and she made a small pan of chocolate bolita for us. And so for me, that drink communicates warmth, it communicates welcome. And so as I share that drink and those stories with other folks, I want to convey that same meaning in that drink. And actually, I've shared that story with my current mentor, Dr. Jennifer Jensen Wallach. And I just told her the story, and she invited me over for dinner at her house. And for dessert, she's vegan. She made a vegan chocolate pudding that was spiced and flavored after chocolate bolita. And so for me, I'm thinking about the kinship we've formed, the relationships we've formed, in her acknowledging how central that flavor and dish is to me, and putting her own spin on it, veganizing it and sharing it with me. It's touching, and it's important, I feel like.
Yeah. To me, what I'm hearing in that story about your mentor is that is also a way to see the notion of obligation and responsibility. Not as a burden necessarily, and of course, I'm going to be careful how I'm using the word burden, because Roman Wilkes just used it. But Roman Wilkes is in the position of being a chef and actually cooking. So he has a slightly different connotation. But what I'm saying right now is that what your mentor did by adding that chocolate that means so much to you is like taking that sense of responsibility and connection to you, right? Becoming, you know, creating that, grounding that social bonding. So with that being said, I once again would like to invite our audiences and by you all who are listening out there to think about what is it that you're sharing? What is it that you want to share with the dishes that you cook, that you share with others? To be mindful of when somebody invites you, and it doesn't have to be at home. It could be at a restaurant, because that's also part of our traditions and ways that we eat nowadays. You know, when somebody takes you to their favorite restaurant, you know, why is this a favorite restaurant? And why is it important that they're sharing that with you? I think those, if we keep thinking about that, hopeful that we will start noticing how the multitude of ways in which food does in fact create a kinship that brings us closer together, that creates those bonds, those social bonds, and that heals us spiritually, emotionally, and biologically, like Yolanda Leyva said earlier in our recording. With all that, I think we'd like to come to a closing. And once again, I would like to thank Josh. I said that I'm not going to refer to him as my guest, because we sort of kind of co-presenting these ideas that we've been working on in terms of culinary heritage and culinary kinship. So I would like to say thank you to our audiences. And also to invite you that if you're interested in this topic, to stay tuned. I'm currently working in teaching another graduate seminar that will have also a class-based project, in which a number of my students are going to create a few episodes for something that I'm referring to as an audio documentary on this very topic of culinary kinship and culinary heritage. So stay tuned, as their episodes will be coming out soon to El Paso Food Voices podcast. Once again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. El Paso Food Voices was created by Meredith E. Abarca, professor of food studies and literature at the University of Texas at El Paso, produced by Adrian Mesa from UTEP's Creative Studios. To learn more about how food practices, memories, and stories shape a city's history, culture, and its character, please visit us at El Paso Food Voices. Thank you.